At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
You don't want to do is give him green grass to run it. This kid can fly.
Here's the snap. Hand off Perry. Perry running to his left. Perry gets away from a tackle. Perry up the sideline. The 15, to the 10, to the 5.
He makes you miss. You have to lock up. Easier said than done. This kid is a premium running back. To Perry again. It's his seventh reception of the day. Perry has a first down. Perry may have more. Hand off to Perry on the sweep. Perry in for the touchdown. Perry, when he recognizes there's a seam, forget about it. He hits the afterburner and it is over.
Welcome to Pure Banter. I'm your host, Bruce Perry, former ACC Offensive Player of the Year and Dope Walker finalist, as well as former Philadelphia Eagle. I'm joined here by Testudo Times managing editor Lila Bromberg, and also Matt Levine, director of digital content. You're used to us talking about Terps on this network, but now we're going to switch things up. We're very excited to bring you this podcast where we're going to debate and discuss a variety of topics around the world of sports, as well as important issues that influence our society and culture as a whole.
Yeah, we've been working on this for a while, and you know, there's no one else we'd rather do it than with Bruce. You know,
one of the best
running backs in Maryland football history, and he's become one of my favorite people over the past few months. Yeah, we're very excited for this.
Absolutely.
We've got some awesome guests lined up. Some will be your favorite former Terps. But we're also going to bring some of the best to play in the NFL, the NBA, and with a few surprises here and there.
So, it is my honor, it is my privilege to introduce one of my good friends, one of our Maryland Terrapin greats, a member of the 2002 National Championship Maryland Terrapins. Ladies and gentlemen, give a warm welcome to Mr. Byron Mouton.
Hey, what's up, man? What's going on, man? I want to personally thank you guys for allowing me to be on your show, man. And I'm excited to have an opportunity to talk to you guys, about sports and about, you know, today, what's going on in our world. And I'm just excited, man. You know, I'm just here in Louisiana visiting family. So my man Bruce called me, stopped whatever I'm doing, man, to help him out and to be on you guys' show. I really appreciate it.
And we appreciate you. We appreciate having you. And like I said, we're going to talk about some things impacting our world, especially the world of sports, college basketball, which you have obviously expertise in the matter. The battle in the bubble. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Right? So thanks so much for joining us, Byron. You know, with a national championship on it, you know, it's only right to kick things off with college basketball is our first topic. And so recently the NCAA trademarked battle in the bubble as discussions have gone on over the past few months of trying to have college basketball in bubbles around the country to still pull off a season. And so it seems like that's something that they're really thinking about. But the question is, how realistic is that? So I guess we'll start with you, Byron. As a player, how would you feel about being asked to enter and stay in a bubble for an extended period of time in college?
Oh, well, me personally, I just love the game of basketball. So if it had anything to do with basketball, I think I would be really, really excited about entertaining that option and see, you know, the intentions of it and where did it go or how did it figure out they're going to make that happen. So I would be really excited because at the end of the day, being a young kid, the opportunity to play college basketball, I would definitely have my ears open and see what their plans are and how they're going to try to pull it off.
I mean, Bruce, obviously you're football, but I mean, Howard, do you feel about living in a hotel for a few months, kind of, you know, away from family and friends, if, you know, that's what it takes to play?
It would definitely be rough. You know, it would definitely be a transition. You know what I mean? Like, the college experience, obviously, you know, you would be pretty much taken away from, you know, and that is a major part of the pageantry of athletics in college, you know? And so a lot of us come on visits where we're seeing, in your case, you know, 20 or 30,000 fans in the stadium that motivated you to come to University of Maryland. Same thing from my perspective in football. You're used to having a stadium packed, or at least I was used to having a stadium packed. I'm used to having a stadium full and being able to pick up off that energy from the fans. So it takes away from the pageantry and the prestige of college athletics. But, you know, to be in one place for an extended period of time, I mean, obviously our NBA athletes are experiencing that now. The game still has gone on without a hitch. But you wonder, like, I believe there would be an extreme difference in play had, you know, you had a stadium full of fans. Like, it just makes you take your game to a completely different level. You know, to me, being in a bubble, it's a scrimmage. And we all know what scrimmages are like. You know, there's no heat. There's nothing that extra that's going to drive you to go the extra mile, because it's pretty much in a scrimmage-like atmosphere. So, you know, for me, it would be rather difficult. But as a player, you know, you're going to play, whether it's two fans in the stadium, whether it's 10 fans or 20,000. You know, you love the game. It's not going to stop you from performing.
I mean, you mentioned that aspect of just, you know, how it'll be impacted with not having fans. But I think another thing that impacts it is, you know, while the NBA can play every other day, that's not what college basketball is used to. You know, I remember it was a really big thing with Mark Turgeon last year of having the team play 4 games in 10 days. I mean, if you're having a bubble, you're probably going to have even more than that, right? And so, you know, if you're taking these college kids, you're not having as much, you know, practices and things like that. They're still, you know, having to do academics on the side and, you know, dealing with all the things they already deal with. And not having that practice time, just going game to game to game without recovery and not having those fans, I think that there would be a lower level in play and it could, you know, possibly hurt some guys' draft prospects.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. But, like, at the end of the day, you're looking at amateur, which is college basketball, versus pros. So them guys, I mean, in an 82-game season, they don't really practice that much anyway when the season starts. But in college basketball, I mean, Bruce Perry knows this too. You know, guys, we practice it throughout the season. You know, sometimes, like, football is one game a week, and you need those practices in to put in plays and scout teams and stuff like that, because every game counts, you know. Right. And, like, college basketball, like Gary Williams, man, he's all about practice and trying to get his system in and make sure we're ready for a game. So it might be a lot different for college coaches, because they way more involved than actually the NBA coaches, because at the end of the day, professional sports, you know, it's a player's game. Mm-hmm. You know, college basketball is more controlled by coaches. NBA, pretty much controlled by players. Players decide, make a lot of decisions on what happens to the coach or to what's going on, man. You know, so it could get tricky. You know, like I say, then you got to deal with the academic side of it too. How you going to handle that? How often do the kids need to go to class? How often, you know, how much actual work you going to give them? So it's tricky when it comes to college athletes. It's just so much dynamic involved with college sports compared to the NBA. They just out there playing, you know.
Right, correct.
So.
And Lila brought it up a little bit, Byron, you just did. And Lila, you said kind of how they'd be doing academics sort of on the side, and going to a bubble, they'd be going for basketball specifically. So would you guys even consider these student athletes, when you call them student athletes anymore, or would they just be called college basketball players?
Oh, here we go. Here we go. I'll give that one to you, Byron.
Well, at the end of the day, you have to have academics. You're a student athlete at the end of the day. You go to college, the purpose is, trying to get a degree, make sure you can have an opportunity. Because like I said, at the end of the day, athletics is 1/3 of your life. So, you know, being a professional basketball player, lifespan, maybe 2.5-3 years. Uh-huh. So, you know, you got to get your degree. You got to have an opportunity to go to school and get educated about your life. So you're always a student athlete. I mean, you know, you want to play professional sports. You know, you're going into it like, I want to be a professional athlete. But at the end of the day, school is involved. I'm always going to be a student athlete first. But you can't go to college just to play in this bubble.
Bruce is getting a little heated right now.
Let me tell you. All right, so obviously, you know, in recent years, the question of whether the student athlete or the quote unquote amateur athlete are they actually a student athlete or are they an employee? Byron, you know just as well as I do, there is a financial aspect, an economic aspect to all of college athletics, whether it be football, basketball, track, what have you. And the fact of the matter is, we all have jerseys that are being sold for merchandise. You've got concessions being sold. You've got the, as far as a state employee, these college coaches, whether they're head coaches of football or basketball, are the highest paid individuals in the state. They're state employees. You understand what I'm saying? So there's an economic aspect to things, and for, you know, however many individuals are on a football team and a basketball team, they're bringing in revenue that they are not privy to. And you know just as well as I do, you have had, you know, teammates who come from disadvantaged situations who may not have enough money to buy soap, toiletries, food, or what have you. That $100 a week that you got on your ID, you can tell me that was enough money for you to eat.
Damn, you guys only got 100?
No! See that?
Yeah.
You can tell me that $100 a week was enough for a growing young man who was involved in college athletics. That's enough for you to eat for a week?
Absolutely not.
That's not enough for me to eat in a day.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
So, you know, the idea, you know, okay, are we employees? I wouldn't go as far as to say we're employees. However,
but I think you are employees, though, if you're asking them to go in a bubble, leave their families, and like being like, you have to go to this location.
We came to college leaving our families. It's not just the
right,
bubble.
But you're like not on campus anymore. It's like we're asking you to go to a hotel for months. Like, how is that not asking you to be an employee if you're literally taken out of your environment to serve their purpose of making them money?
But we're taking out of our environment to live on campus to make them money. So it's not really that much of a difference.
But that's fair.
You understand what I'm saying? At the end of the day, I've always believed that we deserve a piece of the pie. Because, you know, for all intents and purposes, and you know I love my coaches, but those coaches got to pay their mortgages. They got to send their kids to private schools. They got to pay for their nice Mercedes Benzes or whatever cars they drove. They got to make sure their wives are taken care of. And the trade-off is a degree. Now, you know just as well as I do, and I'm being realistic, I would never shy away from the importance of getting a degree and the doors that it may open. But you tell me how many college, not just student athletes, but college students as a whole actually use that degree in the field that they study when they're out into the real world. And how much money, really, per capita, does that degree put into an individual's pocket? You know just as well as I do. You come out of college and You're still starting from the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
Even absolutely. If there's an opportunity.
No, no, I 100% agree, man. And I say that all the time, man. I'm just lucky and blessed opportunity that I can do what I love to do, and that's be around the game of basketball. Mm. And I tell kids all the time, man, you know, there's a lot of people. I, like you say, I don't know the percentage, but I'm guaranteed it's over 60% of people in this world that got a degree and they're not doing what their degree acts, whatever they got a degree at. You know, they
have some type of job.
That's it.
Yeah, they got a job just to make sure they can support their family or if they got kids or whatever it may be.
So think about it. Think about it from now. I don't mean to cut you off, but think about it from this standpoint, Byron. You know, with the amount of with the amount of money that NC2A and college athletics bring to the table or benefit from these athletes, what's wrong with setting up a trust fund for each student athlete that they can take advantage of when they have finished their 4 or 5 years of being at the university? That way, you know, you have a set amount that can be put aside for these guys that, you know, they can get a head start on actual life instead of like the normal college student who actually has bills as soon as they graduate, student loans they have to pay back.
Right. And you guys can't have jobs either.
And we can't.
But like, would you prefer that over like name, image, and likeness? Because my thing with this is like, I think if you're sending them to a bubble, instead of having name, image, and likeness go into effect in 21, you should have it go into effect this season. I mean, just imagine the money you could have made with the Bruce's loose.
My problem with name, image, and likeness is that there's only one Bruce Perry on the team. There's only one Byron Mouton on the team. So my name may be worth a little bit more than, let's say, the guy who's just playing special teams. Now,
absolutely.
Should he not be able to take advantage?
No, I believe they should be paid, but it's like the NCAA isn't going to do that. I think something they might be able to do is like push up name, image, and likeness if they're planning to do it anyway.
The problem with that is not everybody's name is worth as much as everyone else.
Yes. But that's all they're willing to do because it's the NCAA.
Football is a lot of guys on a team, man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Basketball, you might get away because you got 10, 12 guys. You know what I'm saying? So it's probably a lot easier with basketball as smaller sports.
I mean, what impact do you guys think that just having a bubble season might have on the future of the NCAA and the sport, specifically like if they're able to execute as well as they are, or just kind of how it changes, you know, college basketball? Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, it obviously changes it so drastically based on everything we've said, academics. I mean, their classes all have to be online, which most universities are, but I'm sure there's some schools still across the country that are doing in-person classes. I'm sure some of these athletes have those. But what do you do about that? Then, Lila, you said you're asking them to go away from their families. I get the part where they're already at college, but then, Bruce, you mentioned it earlier, they're losing that entire experience. I'm sure most of these guys still have friends that are outside of their team. You know, even like you guys, football and basketball, you guys were friends in college and just stuff like that. They're going to lose the sort of like this, not the social life aspect, but building relationships like that. Mm-hmm. And that'll get taken away. And then I just don't think that paying athletes is something that they will consider, even if this happens, just because the history of for so long that student athletes have not been paid. I don't know how quickly they're just going to go and change that. I feel like that's going to be a process that would take a long time to fix.
Mm-hmm. See, there's what's right, and then there's, you know, the NCAA wanting to make
exactly
money.
So there's just so many different things that it's a crazy time.
It's upsetting. It's upsetting that, you know, this is a multi-billion dollar non-profit organization that is not willing to reinvest in the mechanisms that makes this machine run. Without the athlete, there is no athletics. Period. And I hate to say this, but this is free slave labor. It's free. When you think about the value of that scholarship, it's minute in terms of how much money they're actually bringing in. It's small. You know, so why not share a piece of that pie to the most important aspect or the most important piece in this puzzle?
I mean, there's a reason they're doing all these like fancy athletic facilities and stuff. It's because there's money left over.
There's money left over.
Exactly.
There's money left over. So when you can be like Clemson and invest between $60 to $75 million into your new football facility.
It has a slide in it.
It has a slide in it. Now, granted, you're a national champion, and that's great. But you mean to tell me there's not enough money left over to reinvest in your athletes who've actually bled and sweat to get this national championship?
Well, I think... That's just my theory, man. But I think that before we start having all these conversations about student athletes getting paid, they think, oh, just like you were saying earlier, okay, you have a full ride. You have $100,000. Mm-hmm. That should be good enough for the student athlete. He gets a free education. You know, I never forget when I was thinking about why did Charles or Ed O'Bannon try to sue the NCAA for lighting. Like, what is that about, man? Mm-hmm. What is he doing? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when Charles O'Bannon was thinking about doing it and, you know, the topic came up, and I'm like, why would he do that? Like, mm-hmm. I love my little college basketball mm-hmm. and football NCAA PlayStation game. You know what I'm saying?
I love that game. I was a 97.
Like, what is he doing, man? And then now, you know, with all these conversations, man, it makes all the sense in the world when you – as an athlete actually playing, you don't even think about it. But now, once you're older and get educated about it, like, yeah, the student athlete deserve a piece of the pie. But, like, how do you go about it? Because at the end of the day, I don't want college athletes getting paid. Uh-huh. Some type of fund, like you said, or per diem or whatever it may be. Because it's just too much involved when you're actually trying to pay a college player.
I look at it as... reinvesting in the investment. So just yes. like you go and buy, you know, stocks and bonds on the market, why not set things up so that the college athlete, because let's be real here. There every year there's only 242 people that actually make it to the NFL. Out of the million that are playing college athletics. There's only how many slots in the NBA draft? Not everybody's going to make it. Not everybody's going to have the opportunity to make it to the next level. So with that quote-unquote degree, why not set them up monetarily to be able to benefit for the rest of their life? Nobody's saying give every athlete $1 million. But you can have some type of financial... mechanism put in place to make sure these guys are okay. Because a lot of them are going back to the same situations that they were trying to run from when they were 18. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then some of them lucky to have a good coach because it's not a lot of them out there to actually look out for them. Man.
Right.
You know, and, you know, just like you said, you know, any athlete, man, you got a lot of pride mm-hmm. and you got a lot of ego, so you don't want to really ask nobody for no help.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to do this on my own. I don't want to feel like I need the help or whatever. I'm going to try to do. But like I said, there's some good coaches out there, man. We'll actually help you out. But there's a lot of them, man. When you're done playing for them, man, they're not going to ask you if you're okay. They're not going to call you like, man, I'm just checking on you. I'm just making sure you're all right. You know, I heard you was doing this. I know some guys that's in some type of business that can help you grow yours. Like, that stuff don't happen every day.
Right,
you know
right.
what I'm saying? So it's hard, man. It's just hard if you're not that guy that actually going out there and trying to network with people and trying to grow your business, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. It's just hard. You mm-hmm. know, it's probably like less than 5% of the athletes that go back and try to ask for help, you know, because their pride and ego sometimes kill them. Mm-hmm. You know, I know tons of former players, guys that I'm friends with, they in the same circumstances. Man, I would never ask anybody. I say, man, sometimes it is, man. Sometimes you just need to, man. You know, just let people know what you're doing so they can help you. Mm-hmm. You know? But their pride and ego also get involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So one league or sport that is doing a bubble is the NBA, the NHL also. But we'll talk about the NBA here. I think this has been one of the craziest playoffs, at least I've seen. But we saw a crazy series between the Jazz and the Nuggets, one-on-one matchup with Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray, which was the highest scoring players going against each other in a series ever. So, I mean, just initial thoughts on the bubble and any surprises you guys have seen from the first round?
I wouldn't necessarily say a surprise because this guy is an absolute baller. Luka Doncic, man, Lee, woo! You know, he is a pleasure to watch. You know what I'm saying? A pleasure to watch. And I don't know if there is actually a player that you could actually compare him to. You know, he's tall, he can shoot, he can drive. You know, would you want to say Kobe? No. Like, I think he is in a category of his own. And like I said before, I've enjoyed watching this guy hoop, man. From a basketball player's perspective, man, what do you think, Byron?
Man, I just love the game of basketball because, you know, this time of year, there's baseball. You know, I grew up playing baseball, but I hate watching.
I don't
know. So, being able to have sports in September and October, basketball, mm-hmm. NBA, I love it, man. And what I love about it even more is no home court advantage. That's why I think the games are so intense and you don't know what the outcome it is because, like I say, and the crazy thing about it is, after I beat you, we stayed in the same hotel.
Right.
So you can talk crap to each other, man, you know what I'm saying? And at the same time, we go back and play video games with each other. So, you know, it's a lot of excitement plus, like, it's almost like a movie, man. You just don't know what the outcome is going to be, you know, the drama, the intensity level. Like, man, I love that series with Houston and OKC, man, with the whole Chris Paul getting traded for Westbrook, man. I love that series, man. I just wish Chris Paul would have pulled it out, man, because, you know what I'm saying, that would have made my year, man.
Lila has some interesting thoughts on the series.
I've been telling Bruce and Matt this, like, I really wanted Chris Paul to come out of that. Because just think about it, right? Yes. Like, the Lakers first play the Blazers. So you have LeBron against Carmelo Anthony, one of his good friends. Then you could possibly have him against Chris Paul. And let's be honest, there's a real possibility they could be facing the Heat in the finals. So, like, you're just getting kind of a full banana boat in there, you know?
Exactly.
The full banana boat. So, you know, I was hoping for that. There are just so many, like, great storylines. And honestly, I just don't like the way the Rockets play.
Yeah, I don't either, man.
So I was really hoping they could pull that off. Some interesting calls towards the end of the game. Chris Paul's comments about that were a bit interesting. But, I mean, you have a game like that that's just so in high intensity. I feel like for so long before LeBron came out, you just knew it was going to be the Cavs and the Warriors, right? But I feel like the two teams that I thought were going to end up in the finals at the beginning of this, I don't think are going to end up in it. There's just been so much, like, unpredictable things that have happened. And, like, for instance, the Heat are playing really well. I didn't think they would get past the first round, but now I'm really, you know, reconsidering that.
I think for me, honestly, it would really make my day if LeBron was sent home. I am tired of the narrative being LeBron has made it to so many finals.
Matt is pumping his fists in case you're just listening.
Look, LeBron has made it to how many finals and he's lost how many finals. It's like, I'm tired of the whole GOAT comparison.
He's lost six. It's not even close.
Like, listen, LeBron of his generation, yes, he is the greatest player of his generation, but all time, he's not even close,
man.
Thank you, Byron.
I mean, you got a better comparison to, like, Magic Johnson.
Thank
you
know
what
Thank you.
Oscar Robertson, you know, but like Michael Jordan is a killer, man.
Stone cold.
You know, LeBron has the ball in his hand a lot of the time. So, you know, these stats to me, they are padded.
Inflated, exactly.
Yeah, it's super inflated because he always having the ball in his hand and, you know, he just make a lot of decisions with the ball.
And the game of basketball is so wide open now. It's not like it was in the 90s.
And I've told Bruce and Matt this, like, I feel like I was born in the wrong generation. Like, I would have loved to cover that team, and I think it's interesting, like, you mentioned kind of that aspect, and I think the reason so many people are drawn to LeBron, even if he doesn't add up to that comparison, I think is, you know, his personality off the court in terms of being more open and stuff, and, you know, his social activism. But I think if you're talking about, like, best player of all time, you know, Jordan's up there, but I feel like Kobe's closer than LeBron in terms of being that second person.
If you're going to compare somebody, it's definitely Kobe and MJ, because they killers, man. They score. They demand greatness. They demand greatness from their teammates, and they don't care if you like them or not.
That's
the bottom line.
Absolutely.
But LeBron, after he play you and you probably beat him, he want to hang out with you. That's how LeBron is. That's his mentality. Ain't nothing wrong with that. This
bring
a whole
back
generation.
With someone.
But MJ, he don't care if you like him or not.
No.
Don't care if you speak to him or not.
No.
And MJ hold big-time grudges.
Well, and not only did he hold big-time grudges, he also held people accountable.
Exactly.
And most people are intimidated by an individual of that stature to hold you accountable. And it's not going to be with powder puff words either. Like, The Last Dance, I may have watched The Last Dance 8 times. Because we lived through that era. And it was a breath of fresh air to get the inside track on Michael Jordan and his psyche and how he approached that season, how he approached his teammates in the game. Like, I was like a kid in a candy store waiting for the next episode. You know what I mean? But, you know, when you get a clear-cut understanding of how the great ones operate, how their mental... how their mental psyche and how they approach each and every day like it's their last. You know, I tell you, that it gives me goosebumps. LeBron, but to take a step further, LeBron may be, his best comparison is, just as you said, Magic Johnson, and that's the ceiling. That's the ceiling for LeBron.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I know that Matt has some interesting takes on,
I don't even think LeBron.
What's that, Byron?
Yeah, you go ahead. We'll just edit that part.
Oh, no. I was just saying, I don't think LeBron, like, you know, the way that Kobe and MJ can create his own shot and you know, just create their own offense. LeBron is just a power down here dribbler.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he's a local.
He remind me, because if you watching Milwaukee play right now, right, he remind me just like the Greek Freak. It's actually playing just like a young LeBron, like top of the key, can't shoot. They clog the lane on him, and unfortunately, they're not going to win that series because he don't have no go to moves or he can't shoot. He's just a young LeBron. Until he figured it out, he's going to be in that same situation in the playoffs.
But when you look at it from a perspective of what transpired with a young LeBron, he could not make it out of the finals without help.
Yeah.
Period.
I feel like this is going to bring about kind of what made us want to start this whole podcast was the debate we had with Bruce about the best player in the NBA right now. So, Matt, Why don't you give your controversial take on this?
Hands down, it's not even close. It's Kawhi Leonard. You're talking about Stone Cold Killers. It's Kawhi Leonard.
I almost threw up.
I don't care.
I almost threw up.
I don't care if he's quiet. He doesn't show emotion. He has that internal killer. He's going to put you away.
I'm still waiting to see this killer you're talking about.
Luka Doncic can score 100 points, however many points he wants to score. the Mavs were never getting out of it. I understand the Clippers are a better
Porzingis
team.
Porzingis was injured. Yes. They would have won if Porzingis was not injured.
I have my own things about Porzingis as a Knicks fan, but he's a killer. He could shoot. He's a great defender. I can go on and on and on. It's not Giannis. As
he doesn't Byron take said, over games. He does not take over games.
Kawhi doesn't take over games?
Not in a That's superstar
outrageous.
Way.
That is outrageous. Giannis doesn't take over games.
I admit that. Giannis does not is not aggressive. That he is not as aggressive as he should be in fourth quarters.
You know, okay, so I really.
But the problem with the Greek Freak, he's been in foul trouble so much because he don't have no jumper, man. And the only way he can get to the rim is try to go through people. And every game in his series, and probably the last two games in the Orlando series, he. Like, the last two games, he had 3 fouls in the first quarter. Just because he just pull up game, create his own offense, and just try to be stronger than everybody. And I agree with Matt, man. I think Kawhi Leonard, to me, is the most effective player in the NBA right now. The most effective player.
Now,
Bruce and I just strongly disagree player. With this. Like,
now, wait a minute. Wait a second.
Thank He's a two-way player, man. I mean,
exactly.
He's a two-way player.
I will give you that. But let me ask you a question. Let me ask you one good question. Okay? You're telling me in a finals. Now, granted, I just got finished saying as far as greatest of all time, LeBron's not close. However, greatest of this generation, he is that. You mean to tell me you, Byron Mouton, would take Kawhi Leonard on your squad than LeBron James? I bet you have a change of heart.
No.
I bet.
No, I would not. But
see,
how can you say he's the best player?
These playoffs, I would take Kawhi Leonard.
Okay, but like I think an important aspect is that
LeBron James been doing it for 17 years. Kawhi, you know, he had his thing. You know, he played with Tim Duncan. You know, he had his thing with Toronto. He's a good player. But to dominate for 10 or 15 years in a row, I haven't seen that from Kawhi. It's because he was on a team with LeBron. He's been doing it for 17 years since he got in the league. So, but these playoffs, I'm taking Kawhi back.
Okay, so you just mentioned, which I think one of the reasons why I don't think Kawhi is on that level, right? So one of his first championships, he's with Duncan. He's with Popovich, right? Then he's with the Raptors. Yes. We've all seen what the Raptors have been able to do in the bubble. They've been really good.
Yes.
And then, you know, he's with the Clippers. You take Kawhi out of any of those teams, and they'll still be good. You take LeBron out of any of the teams they've been on, and they would be trash.
Okay.
No.
Really, look at the Cavs. Look at the Lakers without him.
Not Miami.
The Lakers without him, they have a top five player in Anthony Davis.
Exactly.
But that's not enough. You need to, like.
That actually is enough.
Toronto right now is struggling because they don't have that guy. That guy is Kawhi Leonard. They're going to go.
Kyle Lowry's looks very good.
I don't know about struggling.
I don't think they're struggling. I think the Heat, like,
make my stomach hurt.
The Celtics are underrated. Like, I don't think.
I don't believe
in the Celtics. Wait, Lila. Mm-hmm. You said.
Toronto is struggling because they don't have that guy. They don't have that guy, man. And trust me when I tell you this. If the Clippers wouldn't have had Kawhi last against Dallas, they'd probably be out the playoffs. Kawhi giving you 30 every game. I don't know where Paul George been at. I don't know where he's been at.
Oh, he's missing in action. He's been missing in action for like 2 years.
That's what I'm saying. Kawhi Leonard, man, he will play both sides, and he has that talent where he's a leader with his actions. He's not a very vocal guy.
But you also have to take an account for those Clippers that Patrick Beverley hasn't been around either. He plays defense. He may not be much of an offensive weapon, but on the defensive side, he is extremely important.
Okay, so we're talking about.
Let me chime in quick.
All right.
You said
Matt's about to attack me.
No, I'll keep it good. I'll keep it good. You said that LeBron, you take LeBron out of any team he's ever played for, and they're trash.
That's
you're telling me
besides the Heat, but like the other teams,
Chris Bosh, Ray Allen.
I take that back. Besides the Heat,
how many years now?
Besides the Heat,
Besides the Heat, okay, yes. When LeBron was a rookie, the Cavs, and he brought them to the finals, yes. It probably wouldn't have gotten to the finals. I'll give you that.
We should do it like a
but game. You take him off the Lakers now. I think Anthony Davis.
They can still be good.
Yeah.
Will they win a championship? I don't know, but they still be good.
Exactly.
All right.
You need that other player to win championships.
Yes, I agree with that.
You got to have that player. And LeBron's that player, and Kawhi Leonard is that player. And it's a guard-driven league. That's why the Rockets got all these little dudes. But at the end of the day, it's a guard-driven league. You got to have killer, you know, dominant guards to even win a championship. You have to.
So then in terms of winning a championship, we'll wrap up this segment. What do you guys have in terms of your finals predictions? And then who do you have winning the championship? Bruce, you want to start?
First. Bruce, you can go first.
Unfortunately, I'm going to say the Lakers. Until somebody comes up with a formula on how to contain LeBron James, I mean, this guy is literally a triple-double or close to a triple-double every time he laces up his shoes. Until they come up with a formula, Houston's not going to beat the Lakers. Yeah, it's a guard-driven league. Houston is not they don't have a chance, okay? And then, you know, outside of, you know, the Clippers, I don't know if the Clippers are going to make it out of Denver. Because Kawhi can't do it by himself. Paul George is missing in action. I think he's been abducted by aliens. He's just not around.
Is he in his own version of Toon Squad?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, he might be. I think.
Paul George is back, by the way. He had a few bad games, but then he had 5 points and 15 points. So he's back.
He had one good game.
Your version of back and my version of back are two totally different things.
It doesn't matter. Kawhi Leonard will beat the Nuggets single handedly.
Okay. All right.
All right, so I also kind of see the Lakers winning it. I think in my mind, this not only would be incredible, but I actually see this as the finals is going to be the Heat versus the Lakers. Like, just imagine how incredible that would be. Like, LeBron against a team that he won 2 championships with, against, you know, the GM, you know, just a team he's so familiar with. Like, I think that would be wild. And honestly, I think either of those teams could win that. But I think of how badly LeBron wants this and them having a more experienced team, I think they'll go over the edge there.
Well, my prediction is the Lakers and the Celtics.
Really? You believe in the Celtics?
But what about on the other? Oh, okay, yeah.
You believe in the Celtics?
Yes, because she made a point. Miami is playing real well, and guess what? Miami struggles against the Celtics this whole year. They have a hard time beating the Celtics. And the Celtics has 4 or 5 great guards.
Mm. But what about Gordon Hayward? Gordon Hayward might not be in that equation.
They've shown that they don't need him. They're already up 2-0 against
Miami.
Oh,
I think
they're going to need him later on. But like I said, Tatum, what's the other guy name? Walker and
Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown, man. That's some 3 great guards, man. And then you got Marcus Smart that out of nowhere hit 5 or 6 threes.
Mm-hmm.
Which people don't know, he was a good shooter in college. I don't know what happened to him. You know, all of a sudden, I guess he played into that defensive role, but he was actually a good shooter in college basketball. So, and you bring him into the equation. I mean, they got some great guard play in Boston, man. I don't think, you know, and they're fearless, too. So, Miami struggled with them in the bubble and in the NBA season when they had it. So,
I don't believe in Boston. I feel like, you know, at some point in time, they're just going to, you know, crap down their leg. I'm just telling you, I don't believe in them. You know, history has proven me right for the past 3 or 4 years.
Okay, history, man.
It's proving me right. I you know what? I would I'd be more inept to go with Miami. Because I just feel like there's a swagger about them right now. Like, they're hot.
Same thing with Boston, man. I'm trying to tell you.
All right.
Boston got way more bigger athletic guards. That's why Toronto is struggling. Toronto got the middle guards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of your favorite players, Kyle Lowry. He's 5'10".
You know, Bruce and I are both short. You should have nothing against short people.
Hey, I'm vertically challenged, and I know it.
Yeah, and then you got, what's his name? The other guard? Van Fleet.
He's on and off.
Byron, you'd be pleased to know this, right? People don't know this. I think I might have told you, Lila. I received a basketball scholarship for high school.
Oh, did you?
I was a hooper.
What?
And then you just threw in and you did after, the track, too.
Once the football got put in my hand, I threw the basketball away. That was it for me. So.
Oh, so what school offer you for basketball?
No, high school. I was on scholarship in high school for basketball.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Please. What number? College wouldn't offer me any scholarships. Not for basketball. No way. Not that good. I was okay, but not that good. I could jump out the gym. I put you like that. Yeah. I can jump.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been many times, man. I used to go. It's so funny, man. I used to go to CRC, man, and play against some of your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love that. He's like, Bouton. Coach Williams be like, man, why you going? I heard you be going to rec gym playing against some of the football players. I said, man, I like playing in the rec, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
casual basketball, a lot of fun, man. You know, just having fun, man. Just trying to be a regular student, man. Not trying to isolate myself from mm-hmm. the community.
Well, you couldn't have that on bubble. Is,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. But I love going to CRC play against some of you guys, man. Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
You know what? Yeah. My freshman year, we used to go to the CRC. We used to show up at, you know... we used to go to rec all and play the girls. We used to play girls all the time.
Yeah,
we used to come over to Cole and play against Vicky Brick and all those girls. Especially when we had blizzards. That one year we had a blizzard, and we lived in Cole just playing basketball.
Yep,
I'm sure if our coach knew about that, he wouldn't be too happy.
Hey man, you remember? Not to change topics though. I gotta put this out there. You remember back then, man, we had this humongous water gun fight, man.
Oh, I gotta hear his story.
Best time ever, man. We just had this humongous, started with the cheerleaders.
Yep.
I think I shot somebody. And then it just grew, man. It just grew. The whole campus got involved.
Everybody.
So, campus-wide
water gun fight?
Yeah, water gun.
I remember. Might have been my junior year on Southside. We had a blizzard. We had a Southside snowball fight. Like, those were the times where we had so much fun. So much fun, you know, just being together and not a care in the world, man. Those are the times that I genuinely miss. I really do.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was awesome, man.
So before we move on, Matt, real quick, give us your predictions, and then we'll move on to our next topic.
You already know that the Clippers are winning the championship. I said it before the season started, and I keep saying it. And I agree with Byron. I think Boston's heading to the finals. I think they have Kemba now. Kemba's a killer, but he's not the guy. And they have Jason Tatum as the guy. They have Jaylen Brown as support. They have different pieces, and they have Brad Stevens. There's no more to be said there.
Yeah, there's no more to be said because it's not happening.
It's not happening.
Okay. You'll see.
So,
you see, man. I'm with you, Matt, baby.
All right, so moving on to, I think, a topic that, you know, I know Bruce and I have been really excited to get on, and I've been talking with a lot of former athletes about, you know, over the past few months, and especially in the bubble and just in recent years, you know, there's just been so much more power to today's athlete. You know, it's not only a money thing in terms of negotiations, but, you know, the things they're able to say, the organizations they're able to push for. And you see that especially over the recent months after, you know, the tragic killing of George Floyd. And, you know, even before that with Colin Kaepernick, even though he wasn't really able to be respected for that. But you see now where athletes are able to have those voices and be kind of these voices of change. And so, I mean, just going back to you guys first off, like, you guys didn't have social media, which is a big aspect of this. But in terms of, you know, just talking with the media, what were you told by SIDs or teams about speaking out on issues of social injustice, or kind of like what you were allowed to talk about?
I'll start that off, Byron. For the most part, you know, when we were back in school, the social unrest portion of what's going on in today's world, we didn't really have to deal with that. I think the most traumatizing thing that we had to live through was 9/11. And so, you know, from, you know, a social activism standpoint, I believe, you know, we were together a lot. You know, it wasn't, you know, as much division, especially on campus. And I'm not going to say not as much division in the world, because that has always existed.
Right, you just didn't have smartphones to show exactly everything that's going on.
It just wasn't, you know, media devices to be able to capture these moments so quickly. So from that standpoint, like I said, you know, 9/11 was the biggest thing that we had to deal with. But, you know, to take it a step further, we weren't necessarily told not to say anything. It was almost ingrained in your mindset not to say anything. It's almost like you were in fear of stirring the pot too much, you know, for fear of repercussions on the back end. You know, back then, you know, all of us were aspiring to make it to the professional ranks. And the last thing you wanted was a pro team feeling like you were one of those guys that was going to stir the pot. The last thing you wanted was a pro team to have a stigma on you that you were a Colin Kaepernick or a Malcolm Jenkins. Like, you tried to stay safe and not speak. Now, you know, I am so proud. It gives me goosebumps. I am so proud of today's athlete, because not only are they using social media to their advantage, not only are they using these platforms to speak on pressing issues that affect our community and affect our lives, they are doing it strategically in a way that can get things done. From, you know, Malcolm Jenkins and the coalition, you know, teaming up with the NFL owners to promote change in the social, in the justice system, you know, to Colin Kaepernick willing to be a martyr, willing to lay down on the sword, be nailed to the cross, whatever type of metaphor you want to give to him for that, he was willing to risk it all for something that he believed in. And a lot of these student athletes have followed suit. You see, you know, Mike Gundy wearing the t-shirt. And remember, Guns was a coach at the University of Maryland. I know Gundy.
That's not something to be proud of.
Him wearing the t-shirt and his running back stepping up saying, no. You know what I'm saying? Like.
But then they were forced to do that video that looked like they were held hostage.
But my point.
No, I get your point.
My point is saying it was done. My point is saying he was not afraid to stand out on that limb and be a catalyst for change. These guys have more power in their right thumb to press a button than we ever had when we were in school, and they're using it, and I'm proud of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you mentioned kind of making actual change happen, and I think having the NBA players in a bubble specifically, has really allowed them to create this change, right? Because you're passing with these guys every day in the hotel. There's so much momentum right now, and I know I've seen from player vlogs and just from different articles and things like that, that there's, you know, been active meetings among players throughout this entire bubble about what they can do. When the Milwaukee Bucks decided to protest and not play that game, they spent hours in the locker room talking to, you know, Wisconsin state attorney, talking to the lieutenant governor about, you know, what they can do. They talked to Obama, a person who played a big role in all this was actually Maryland alum John Lucas, mm-hmm. who is an assistant for the Rockets and apparently had a very powerful speech, as did Doc Rivers. Like, I think it was just kind of the perfect moment that they're able to be in this bubble and all collaborate to make actual change.
Yeah. I totally agree with both of y'all, you know, but like I said, when we played, like I said, we was all knit. We was all cool. We wouldn't even think about it. Like, I think the biggest difference now is somewhat not understanding, because we didn't have the smartphone. So mm-hmm. we didn't, like people, a lot of people said it was going on, you know, 400 years, but now we actually catching it on film, mm-hmm. as it's happening. Mm-hmm. So that makes a huge difference. So we not, you know, man, you heard what happened like 4 months ago. You know, it's no momentum when it's something like that. But now we got the smartphone. Like, you can actually, this happened like 2 minutes ago. Look, mm-hmm. I'm gonna send you this link. Mm-hmm. So it's just different times now. And then, like I said, social media plays a big part of it, and which is great. The guys can actually have a platform to express how they feel about all these situations, injustice, stuff like that. And I'm just glad in my lifetime, to be honest with you, I can be a part of it. Right. You know, I can actually, being a minority black person, be able to, you know, help people my experience and what my ideas are, how can I help. I'm so happy that I can be a part of it and express and educate people, especially like my players, you know, myself being a coach, a mentor, and being around the kids, man. And I'm just, at the end of the day, I'm just lucky and blessed that I can be a part of it, man, in my lifetime, you know. So that's the most important thing to me, that I can actually be educated sometimes, and I can educate other people. Like I say, just being a minority. Mm-hmm. So that's more the most important thing to me, that we're actually having these quote-unquote tough conversations, you know, to talk to people about it.
I got a question, and you know, this – you know, might it be a question that you might not be comfortable, or you might not even, you know, you might not have ever been posed this question. But for Matt and Lila, being, you know, two white Caucasian people in a time that things are as more difficult and harsh for, you know, your African American counterparts, like, how do you two view things? Things that are transpiring, and how do you feel like we need to progress moving forward?
I mean, you and I, you know, have talked constantly about this. You know, for me, I think, you know, I grew up in D.C. You know, I went to a school that was very diverse, that, you know, really talked about a lot of these issues. And I think, you know, a lot of white people don't get that education and don't understand white privilege and all these different things. And so I'm very grateful that I was able to get that. And I think for me, like, for so long, there's been a thing with journalists where it's like, you're not supposed to say your opinion, you're not supposed to say anything. But when it comes to people being killed just for the color of their skin over and over again, you know, it's been happening for so many years. You had the stuff back in 2014 when, you know, social media was really taking off, and it's just been thing after thing after thing since then. And, you know, I think after George Floyd happened, I think the mindset for me is like, I can't be quiet on this, you know, anymore. And I think even before that, I was talking about it in terms of my articles, in terms of doing features on people's experiences. But I think for me, I reached a point where it's like, it's not enough for me just to be, you know, an ally with people I know personally and having these conversations and putting out features where I'm explaining these issues from someone else's perspective. You know, I really felt like it was time for me to I've always had a stance about this, but just to really kind of be as vocal as I could about it, because it's something that's so important to me. And, you know, we had a decision as a site. where after the NBA stood out, and actually since a lot of the killings happened, I was like, you know, I don't want to just focus on sports on this website. Like, a point that athletes across the NBA and other leagues made is like, things are more important than sports right now. And I told my staff, I said, we're not publishing anything on sports for the rest of this week.
Fist so
my mindset was,
out of anger,
you know,
that it started
we shouldn't be
week.
Focusing on this. Let's focus on the important
and that
things.
Really
I,
motivated
you know, Bruce
players.
Players. I mean,
they
would
play
half
to
chicken wings
for
them.
They
used to light up. Yeah, they used to light up pennies with a lighter and throw them on the court.
We put out a statement.
John Lucas used to collect them.
We actually didn't have our daily Maryland
just so many things. And it's like, he and I were talking about how it's crazy. It's not like,
and we just put out a statement.
It's not the same,
and we kind of just kept putting
form in terms of blatant racism in some regards. But he and I were talking like it's still the same exact thing. It's still these people that just like don't seem to get it. And so my mentality is like, I'm gonna shove it down your throat, and if you don't want to listen to it, then don't read my work. I really don't care at this point. I'm gonna fight for what I believe in, even if some people think that's biased or don't want to hear it.
Matt.
I was just going to say, Lila, you hit pretty much everything that you took the words out of my mouth. I think it's most important now that, and we said it before, the social media aspect, the smartphone aspect, that's why these stories get out so quickly. But that's also why athletes can now have a voice more than they were able to before. And I think that's important for us too, as reporters. It's important for anybody in this country, anybody in this world. And anyone's voice matters, and people have to understand that you can speak up, you can disagree, you can have these tough conversations, and that's how you get through this, that's how you get past it. But I think the aspect of just having the social media now helps in having these athletes go out and post things and be able to speak their mind instantly when something happens. I just think that's more important than it ever has been.
You know, Earlier in the week, you know, Lila and I were talking, and she asked me to put together a brief synopsis on what I felt, about, you know, everything that's been going on in our world, and I know you posted it up there. And Byron, you know, I don't know if you had an opportunity to see it, but you know, this is what I said. I said, you know, 2020 has been nothing short of the joyous moments we came into the year expecting. Just as years pass, we entered it with promise and high hopes for change, only to be crushed with early disappointment and sadness. First, we lost one of our brightest stars in Kobe Bryant. Then the horrors of a pandemic swept our globe. Adding insult to injury, we bore witness to many social injustices that saw our African American brothers and sisters fall victim to police violence, brutality, and flat out executions in our streets. Will the next 3 months have us witness the change our 44th president spoke of? Or will we be subject to more loss, more hurt, more pain? If America is no doubt the land of the free, why is it not all of its citizens are treated equally in the eyes of Lady Liberty? Why is it so easy for some to hate when love is such a better option? America needs to wake up from this nightmare. And we are in a nightmare. We are in a nightmare that we so desperately need to wake up from. I should not have to worry about having a conversation with my 13 and my 11-year-old son on how to deal with the police. And it's a sad fact of the matter that an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old Caucasian boy does not have to have the conversation with his parents that an 11-year-old and 13-year-old African-American boy needs to have. That's the world that we're living in right now. And it's sad. It's disgusting. It's despicable. Love is always hard. Love always comes with some form of sacrifice, some sort of discomfort, because for some people it's not easy to do. But hate is so easy. It's so easy to be consumed by it. It's so easy to let your heart be overrun with it. But it also takes so much more energy. Think about it. How much more energy does it take for you to be mad at somebody? Like, you got to keep that facade going. You got to keep it going. Like, it takes energy to be angry. And it takes less energy to love. At the end of the day, if the media, if popular culture, if they just showed more empathy, more sympathy, and more love instead of more hate, more rage, we'd be better off. But what sells? Fear sells. Hate sells. Violence sells. And that's what this country has run on since they bought my ancestors over on the ships to build it. This is a country that we know was not built for us. It was just built by us. And it's unfortunate. However, the times are changing. The times are changing. I am more proud of this younger generation than I have ever been, because they are finally stepping up saying enough is enough. And you know what? We don't care if we loot, because we've been looted against forever. As a matter of fact, this stuff isn't ours anyway. There's been a 450-year head start on wealth.
Most of the people looting were white, too. It was like a lot of people that just like came to take advantage.
It's like the woman said, playing Monopoly and you being able to go around that board for 450 years and collect all the wealth, and we still stuck at go.
And I think for you guys, like from an athlete thing, like I think what was so powerful about what the NBA did is like it's saying like you can't like just watch us and just seek us as entertainment as black men when you're treating, you know, people that look like us the same way. I mean, it's like, you can admire, how can you admire someone as an athlete and, you know, just like center your whole life around kind of rooting for a team and, you know, just spend so much time watching sports and admiring these people and then be, you know, fearful and hateful of everyone else. Like, it makes no sense in my mind. It's just so messed up. And I think it's so important that athletes are taking that stand, because, like, it's just ridiculous.
What upsets me the most, and it disgusted me, it really made my stomach curl, for Roger Goodell to come out and say Colin was right. We know. We know he was right. But you hijacked that narrative and made it about a flag that we consistently said day after day after day after day, it's not about the flag.
Yep, he continued to say that too. It never was about the flag, and he made a point. But, you know, it comes with that quote-unquote, they say he didn't have a plan. you know.
I think his plan was executed flawlessly.
Yeah, and like you said, if he had some people out there, was out there rioting, burning places down, then they would have heard his voice, and then you know they would have took it seriously, whatever it may be. But they didn't loot and riot
in his name for his cause. That's not when the looting and rioting started. It started when that man held his knee on George Floyd's neck.
That's what I'm trying to say. That's why it's a lot of change now, because you know you'll get a lot of people attention, which is terrible when we start looting and damaging their property.
Right.
There you go.
Now they're listening. You know, that's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. And then, you know, I was honestly, when the NBA decided, well, not the NBA, when Milwaukee Bucks decided to protest that game, I'm like, why would they do that? Like, you know, me just thinking selfishly, I want to watch them play,
right.
And I started thinking, like,
there was a bigger picture.
You know, why would they do that? They don't have no plan. And then I don't know if you've seen, probably 3 hours later, Chris Webber came out in the interview.
I saw that.
And then he was like, you know, everybody tell everybody they don't have no plan, but sometimes you don't have a plan. You make decisions based on your beliefs and what you're thinking and how you feel.
Right.
But they spend that time trying to make a plan with like they literally ask like powerful people around their state, like, what should we do? They ask Obama, what should we do? So like, you know, there is a plan, even if people didn't realize it. But you
know
what?
Even you know, with the perception of people not feeling as though they had a plan.
Yes.
What was executed was flawless.
Yes.
Sometimes it doesn't take a plan to spark a reaction or action.
Exactly.
All it takes is you doing. Sometimes we just need to do and stop talking.
So why don't we end on kind of this question that I've been thinking a lot about and I wanted to pose to you guys as we kind of wrap things up here. Should they have tried to use their leverage more for coming back to play? Because one thing I thought about is all these owners have all this power, and while, you know, you're asking them to use arenas as voting areas and, you know, donating money to all these causes, if I'm a player, I'm trying to use my leverage to have these powerful people talk to the people who are actually making these laws.
But
I think some people are. I mean, I heard it on a couple of NBA broadcasts that they're trying to get to the state attorneys. And I mean, a lot of you talk about Breonna Taylor. I mean, that's the biggest subject right now, trying to get those people to hold accountable that's happened to Breonna Taylor. Like, I think the NBA and the WNBA, they made a pact. So every opportunity that they had to get interviewed or use their platform, they're trying to use that to get
responsible
for Breonna Taylor arrested or bring them to justice.
Mm-hmm.
So my theory, that's funny you say that, because I'm like, you know, let this season go, man. Let's play this bubble. It's a short season. And before the actual NBA season starts for 2021, we need to have a plan. And before we start that season, we need to talk to NBA owners and make sure we're all on the same page before we start this NBA season, you know. So I think that's what they should do, you know, to come up with these ideas that they can talk to these people about legislative and make sure that – I just don't understand. I'm just stuck right now, to be honest with you, just Breonna Taylor, man. I'm just trying to figure why there's no justice right now for her.
Because the longer that you prolong things, the more it is not – in the forefront of America's mind. However, what they're not realizing is it ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
And we're going to demand the same type of justice that we've been demanding from the start, the middle, and whenever we get to an end. We're going to demand the same thing. You know what I mean? Understanding how this country has been run and how you know, politics has been infiltrated by multi-level corporations.
Yeah.
You know, change right now takes a lot more time than years past. You know, a lot of companies have their hands in pockets. You know what I'm saying? So it's very important, you know, for our community. It's very important for every community, not just the African-American community. But it's very important just to vote, you know. It's very important for you to understand exactly what, you know, the people whose name are on the ballot, really understand exactly what they're about. Like, don't just vote because you see a name and it's popular. Like, know what's going on. You know, for me, and, you know, I get into heated discussions with the CEO of my home, because if I don't believe in a particular candidate, if I don't believe in any one of them, I won't vote for either of them. Because to me, evil is still evil. There's no such thing as a lesser evil. So if I don't believe in you, I won't even partake. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, that may not sit well with certain people. I already know it doesn't sit well here, but that's just, you know, my belief system. So it's important because I wouldn't want to vote for somebody just because of their name and then afterwards look at everything they stand for and say, you know what, this doesn't even align with my moral compass. But maybe I should have voted for this guy, but you know what, this doesn't allow my moral compass either. Like, where do I go here? You understand? That's a dilemma that a lot of people have, and that's why it's so important for you to really know your candidates. Like, don't just take my word for it. Go do your own research and find out. You know what I'm saying? And
especially at like a more smaller level too. I think that's something that people miss out on a lot.
Right. And hopefully, you know, there is some type of commonality that, you know, you may share with a particular candidate that you feel more comfortable in investing your vote in. But, you know, it's more important now than ever that we go out there and exercise that right. And notice what I said, exercise the right.
Yes.
Our ancestors fought for the right, for the opportunity for us to vote or not to vote. They didn't fight for that just so you can vote. No, they fought for the opportunity so that you can make a choice. You know, I think sometimes we get, you know, caught up in, you know, our ancestors fought for this and that. No, they fought to give us a choice to do it, you know, and exercise your choice. You know, that's the beauty of this country. But, you know, hopefully, you know, America wakes up from this nightmare. Hopefully our leaders can do something and spark some type of change and really make it tangible so that it helps the community as a whole. Because I understand, you know, there are bad apples. Not all white people are evil.
No way, man.
Not all black people are good.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, at the end of the day, when you find the best in people, you invest in it. Invest in the best. You know what I'm saying? So, like I said before, I'm praying that this hour and a half that we took out today really helps somebody understand. I'm praying that, you know, they can look and see two black men and two white individuals, you know, getting along, having commonalities, but also having differences, and it being okay. It doesn't mean that we have to be at odds or be at each other's throats. We can respect one another. We can respect one another's opinion. And we can still all coexist on this big blue planet we call Earth.
So. Yeah, I think that's a really good point to end on. I mean, the only thing that that I definitely won't agree with is Matt's Clippers take. But
I was just about to say something. One thing I don't agree with, Kyle Lowry.
Well, I guess we'll end on that. thanks so much to everyone for joining us for our first episode.
Appreciate you guys, man.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. We're excited to you know, have more great guests on, and we're gonna be coming back with some great episodes coming up.
Byron, thanks a lot for your time, brother.
Thank you, man. Thank you for the invite, man. I continue you guys' success on y'all's show, man. And like I said, I keep you guys in my prayers, man. All this success, man. That's a wonderful thing you guys are doing, man. And like I said, I'm blessed that I could have an opportunity to be a part of it. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you, man. Go Terps.
Yeah. All right, yes, sir.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent, being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.